Thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. Today is the first hour will be the power hour. Second hour will be general questions. Calls are starting to come in pretty heavy. There's still room for questions, but you better jump in pretty quick. If you have a question, a comment, a topic for the first or second hour, anything you want to talk about, go ahead and press one on your phone and we'll get to you. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it, we'll talk about it. And today is the power hour, so we're going to be taking your calls and answering all of your questions about maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, troubleshooting, you name it. We'll talk about it, and I've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power in to help me out. Looks like we've got Bruce and Ethan today. Hey, guys, welcome back.
Hey, Kevin, how are you? And thank you for having us. It's always our pleasure.
Yeah, hey, so is John – hey there. Is John goofing off again this week?
John, they kept him at that racetrack.
Ah, yeah.
We're going to have to treat him like Paul Newman, chain him to his desk or chain him to a workbench.
That's right. That's right.
And like when Paul Newman made his salad dressing, his friends loved it so much, they chained him to his big boiler and they wouldn't let him go. So maybe that's what we'll have to do with John.
There you go. So what's new and exciting at Pittsburgh Power this week?
Well, what I want to talk about is there's a lot of people buying older mechanical big cam Cummins trucks, especially people that are doing vocational type work. But when they take and put a younger person in that never drove a mechanical engine, they really need to train them, because we no longer operate between 12 and 1300 and 16. We now operate from 1700 to 2100. And this is not being explained to these young people. And these young people don't realize that they're running an aluminum piston. They have to keep the RPM up higher to get the pressure off the piston to keep from boring a hole down through the top of it. And we still have a lot of people out there running without the proper gauges, a working pyrometer, a turbo boost gauge, and knowing what the turbo boost gauge means. And on a big cam Cummins, we like the liquid filled fuel pressure gauge, and when you drove my truck, you had that gauge right in front of you, and it's a blessing because it lets you know just how hard you're gouging on that throttle. So I just went through this with a person today. He bought an older big cam and cranked it up, and he cranked it the wrong way and put a young driver on it. Lasted 2 weeks. You just can't do that.
That's crazy. You know, this topic kind of ties into the whole thing that I've been talking about with autonomous trucks and new technology. And every new technology we get makes the driver less important. The technology is making up for the shortcoming of the driver. And this started with electronic engines. We drive electronic engines very differently than we drive a mechanical engine. In a mechanical engine, you have to drive the truck. You have to control throttle and shifting and RPM, and you have to stay on top of that all the time. And you're right. There are very few drivers that know how to drive mechanical engines. And, you know, back then we were taught never let the engine lug, because you put too much fuel to the cylinder. It washes down into the crankcase. It was hard on bearings. There's just a big, big difference in how you drive a mechanical engine. And that's why those gauges are so critical, because you have to monitor that stuff and watch how you're driving. And we just don't have a lot of drivers that do that anymore. Today, drivers get in, hit the key, go down the road, the truck shifts itself, it manages its own RPM, and they're, you know, who knows what they're doing. Playing on Facebook for all I know while they're driving. But a mechanical engine required you to drive the truck full time.
That's correct. And what I want to tell the people is, if you are buying an older mechanical, and if you've never driven one, or if you're going to put a younger driver in that doesn't understand it, call me. If you're a client of mine, that's much better. Call me and put me on your driver's cell phone, and I'll talk him through. I'll spend some time with him on the phone as he's going through the rolling hills or climbing a mountain. Because we hate to see engines destroyed because of lack of knowledge. I just had another call this morning, a guy with a 5EK Caterpillar, 1.2 million miles on his original crank damper. And guess what? He had noises coming out of the front of the engine. Nobody could tell him what it was. He said, "I know the truck was talking to me, but I just heard about you guys." He broke the crank.
Ooh, oh boy.
It should have been on its third damper. It should have been on its third damper. It was still on the original.
You know, something else to warn drivers about, if they've never driven a mechanical engine, many of our drivers today will just wait until the truck shuts itself down if there's something going wrong. They're just so used to warning lights and shutdowns. They'll just keep driving a truck till it shuts down and they're on the side of the road. On a mechanical engine, there are no safety shutdowns. If oil pressure drops or we lose water or whatever it might be, and you continue to drive that truck, you're going to lose an engine. And there are very few drivers left that realize that.
Yeah. We did have some big hams that had a high coolant temp shutdown. My truck happens to have one of those. And I found that out the hard way in a 113 degree day coming out of the Las Vegas show. And that's why I designed the large capacity radiators that I did back then, was because of that day.
Yeah.
But Ethan wants to talk about some auto shift transmissions and one of the problems we just found. Ethan?
Yeah, and it deals with all wiring, too. When you're taking apart wiring harnesses, because occasionally I'm even guilty of it, using a paint marker or something to distinguish where all the connectors went, because they don't always, the OEMs, make it so that you can, they don't make it so you can't plug the wrong plug in the wrong spot. Some of the connectors are identical, and then it throws you through a loop for a little while of why there's a light on for the transmission, or in this case, the engine too.
So with the one we had two plugs that were identical, and you could mismatch
side by side. Yes. Wow. And they were within reach of each other too. And it looked right. You know, when you're looking at it, like, well, everything goes where it should. And here, well, you know, that they were backwards.
Years ago, we had little tags that had a string on them, and we would tag wires for everything when we were pulling an engine, and we would put a number on it and then put the corresponding number on where it's going to go, because once the engine's out and it blocks at the machine shop and it's 3 weeks later, you're putting the engine back in, it's hard to remember where everything went.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anything else this week, or should we get to some calls?
Well, you know, we're getting some things ready for the Louisville Truck Show, but other than that, let's take some calls. Hey, Kevin.
Right.
We just got back last night from our second owner-operator snowmobile conference, and we were in Bear Lake, Utah, and Idaho. And my gosh, what a gorgeous, gorgeous place. We had 3 days of wonderful riding, 12 owner-operators, Jim Burt, who has a ranch and trucks and does excavation and trucking. He raises beef, and he treated us to a steak dinner from the beef that he had raised. And we had a great time. It's always
a
wonderful time when we get our owner operators together to ride in the mountains, and we all help each other. And it's a pleasure.
There you go. Well, speaking of Louisville, I can't believe it's here already. I had to sit down yesterday and start planning our trip. We're making it a road trip for a couple reasons. I have some stops I need to make. Aaron and I and our new partner, Rich, who's our programmer, it'll give us some time on the road to get some work done. So we'll be pulling out of Oregon here in less than 2 weeks and heading that way.
And don't forget about that meeting we have, you and I, concerning that truck, that new truck.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so we're looking forward to it. Let's get to some calls. Let's get started in Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Bruce. I have a 2004 Series 60 D-Deck 4 14 liter. I had to have a radiator replaced this past weekend. I have always had the green coolant in it and did the SCAs and the charged water filter, the whole nine yards. Well, when they did the radiator, and I did not know this until I went to pick it up yesterday, they put STP brand note, N-O-A-T, extended life that claims 1 million mile life, which I don't buy that. But it also claims no need for SCAs, and the water filter, the garage says, is just a filter, not charged, because you don't use it with that stuff.
Yep, let me get to a break. We'll come back, and we will address that right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power helping me out. We're going to go back to Herschel in Ohio. Herschel, go ahead.
So anyway, what I wanted to know is that red extended life note coolant okay in this Series 60? I've always been told that Series 60 should have nothing but the green, and I'm old-fashioned just like Bruce. And the coolant comes out every 2 years, and it gets new stuff. What do you guys think of this red stuff? Should I get it out of there, or am I okay?
Kevin, you've studied antifreeze more than I have. I'm going to let you answer that one.
And I'll ask you guys a question first, because you see trucks every day. There are lots of Series 60s running around with the extended life coolant. And I've heard this before, that that engine shouldn't have that coolant, but I haven't found any evidence that clearly those are better coolants. Whether they'll last a million miles, the number used to be about 600,000. But the only difference is they've come up with an additive that doesn't get depleted. So in the old coolants, the coolants we were used to, the additive that's in there, and mostly we're talking about the additive that prevents cavitation. And that would be depleted in the old coolant, and that's why we used a water filter. Wasn't necessarily to filter the water, it was to recharge those additives. So that clearly works. You can do that on a Series 60. You'll never have a problem. It's a little more expensive, a little more time consuming because you're always putting on the filter. It's not a big deal. But I've run the red coolant in many of my Series 60s. I've never had a problem. And it's a better coolant. It protects better. We don't have to worry about, you know, keeping the additives charged in that one. So yeah, so you can either eliminate the water filter completely, because there's really no point in filtering our coolant. The coolant system is a closed system. If there's no contamination in there, there's really no way for it to get in there. So the filter becomes kind of useless. So you could eliminate the whole thing, or you use blank water filters that don't have the additive, either one is fine. I prefer, if I'm going to run the red, I just always took the filter off completely and just got rid of it. So I'm okay with the red. I've heard this before. I've heard that it's hard on some of the seals. It doesn't match some of the metals. To know for sure, we'd have to go back to the Detroit manual and see exactly which coolant they're recommending or which coolants are acceptable. But I've run it with no problems.
Okay. Let me say one thing. The only thing that I have ever read, and this was on the Big Cam Cummins, there was a certain antifreeze, and I'm not going to say the name, that was eating the grommet that guided the coolant from the head to the block. And I don't think we have those type of grommets anymore. So I can't think of anything in the 60 series that would be affected by the red coolant. Ethan, what's your thoughts on this?
I've seen the red coolant more and more in the Detroits. No bad effects that I've noticed.
Herschel, whenever they put the red in, did they flush the block out to get all the green out of it?
That I forgot to ask, but the garage that I took it to, I've been using for years and years. I've never had an issue. It's kind of like going to your place, except they don't do engines. They're really thorough. But I did not ask that question. Maybe I should.
You know, Herschel, one of the other things you could do is take a coolant sample and send it to the lab. Polaris does coolant samples as well as oil samples. And in the notes, you could ask them. You could say, this is the coolant that's been installed. Here's the engine. Here's the year. Is this compatible? Because they keep the database of all the coolants, all the engines, what's compatible. And while they're at it, they'll be analyzing the coolant, and you'll know what you've got. You know, whether there is any problem with it or – and that's never a bad idea anyway, because they may pick up some sort of contaminant that's in there. You know, I don't recommend sampling coolant the way we sample oil. Because, again, it's a closed system. Once we know the coolant is right, then the only thing we really need to keep up on is, you know, is the balance correct? Are the SCAs fully charged? So, you know, if I'm going to run a long life coolant, and this one's claiming a million miles, I would say I would sample it probably every 250,000 just to keep an eye on what's going on.
I'm a little bit more anal than that. I'll sample it every time I change the oil.
And you could do that.
Check it with the test strip. Test strip.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. But a full-blown, you know, lab analysis, I would do every 250,000.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. We're off to Louisiana. Troy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Bruce, Ethan. Just real quick, when Stuart Stevenson built my Detroit, they put the purple antifreeze, and they said it had to have purple in it or else they would void the warranty. So there's another one for you.
Yeah, let me jump in there real quick, because we have all these crazy colors and, you know, everybody's confused. When it comes right down to it, and then we can talk about brands. When I did the research on this, it was many years ago. There were only like two or three manufacturers in the country making coolant. Everybody else was just private labeling the same stuff. So it didn't matter what brand you were getting. You're probably getting the same stuff as the bottle right next to it with a different brand, because there were only a couple companies actually manufacturing this. And then they just private label it for everybody else. But the other thing I found, I worked with the association that, you know, manages all the coolant and all those things. And they claim that when they've gone out and done like surveys of shops, and they claim over 50% of the repair shops in the country cannot tell you which coolant should go in which engine. They just didn't know. They just put in whatever.
Yeah. That's what happened. I just said, may I read the bottle? Because you know I got the AMSOIL business. I read the bottle, seen the ad. I was happy. I just said, go ahead.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, Bruce, Ethan, I got one for you. I have been all over this truck, can't figure it out. New compressor, new dryer, new governor, new dispense line from the dryer, from the compressor all the way down to the dryer. I leave the trailer brake engaged. I don't lose any air on the truck overnight. I set the trailer brake, leave the truck brake engaged. I lose only 3 pounds. What's happening is my primary will pump up to 120 pounds of air. Secondary will only pump up to 105, 110, and then leak, and then cause the primary to leak down and match it. And then it sits there for quite some time until the suspension is working. It leaks below 100, and the compressor builds up. Now, it builds up pretty quick. Now, I pressure test it, and it gets it from 85 to 100 pretty quick within the time limit. I can't someone set a check valve. I called Bendix. Everything's Bendix. I called Bendix to see what they would say. They told me that the Horton fan clutch is leaking. What's your input?
Well, I'll tell you, I've fought air compressor problems back in the days of the big cam, and sometimes they could drive you crazy. Where do you live? What part of the country?
I live down in Florida.
Do you ever get up our way?
Oh, yeah. I've got all your guys' high-performance stuff on my truck.
Man, what I think you ought to do is, what kind of truck is it?
Freightliner Classic.
I think you ought to get in our shop and let's all have a meeting and sit down at the conference table and discuss this and then go from there, because, and we could even get Freightliner involved. I got some friends at Freightliner, because this could be a tough one. So to answer this other comment, yeah. I've seen this.
Because when it gets down to that 100, 105, man, and I have to get on these rough roads, I get when that airbags hit on, mainly on the cab, hit that stopper, man, God, I think my teeth are going to come out.
That's right. We need to rebuild the infrastructure.
Hey, this one's been puzzling me for a week, and I'm a pretty good mechanic, and I have not been able to figure this one out.
Now,
between
fan clutch issues or fan issues and compressors, which the two can be tied together, this is one of the tougher ones to troubleshoot. Everybody thinks it's simple, and it's amazing how crazy this one can get. So I agree. You got to get your hands on this one to do it. We're going to get to a break. We'll come right back with more calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to head off to Wyoming. Jay, welcome to the program. It's your turn.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I've
Good.
Got a taboo question for you, for Bruce and them guys. I'm thinking about putting a bigger turbo on my truck. I've got a 3406E. It's a 98 6TS model. I'm thinking about going on, but what are the ill effects of going to bigger turbos? I mean, pistons, bearings, there's got to be ill effects, I'm guessing, going to those higher pressures on the intake, you know, manifolds. But what are there, or is there any?
Okay, first question is, Is this a 475 or a 550?
What's the 550?
And what does it make for boost on a hard pull now at 1600 to 1800 RPM?
Right now, it's I'm lucky to get over 33. When the truck was built, the motor was built, they put it on the dyno, and they said, after it was built, you know, it was breaking in, all that stuff, they said it was putting 600 to the ground. And that's, you know, I bought it from the guy that did that. So, and this has been, I've got about 500,000 on it now.
Well, they weren't telling you the truth, because you can't have 600 to the ground, which is 700 flywheel, with only 32 to 33 pound of boost, which is what a 550 needs. So either their dyno was wrong, or they calculated something wrong.
Yeah, well,
so if the ECM, if the ECM has been, or you have a turbo boost leak, so if the ECM is set to put 600 to the ground, you need to get our bigger turbo on there, and manifold too. The our Pittsburgh Power full tilt manifold does wonders. It flows 20% more exhaust. Lowers the exhaust temperature by 125 degrees. It's a quarter mile of the gallon, and the turbo's another quarter mile. And that takes pressure off the pistons and allows the pistons to actually run cooler. So, living in Wyoming, I came through there yesterday when those vicious winds you had. My God, that was something.
Oh, geez. But, Nebraska and Wyoming, both.
When I headed south down towards Craig, Colorado, I thought the trailer was going over at times. And the road was covered with ice, and at 40 mile an hour, it would just take you from the right lane and put you right in the left lane. But anyway, one of our owner operators didn't make it through, and he got caught in the shutdown when they shut the interstate down yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
All right, so what? Do you ever get east? Can we put this on the dyno and see right where you're set?
Well, I was just there. I was there Thursday. I stopped in there and bought a vibration dampener and a balancer. And that's actually my next question after I answer this one. But I was going to have you guys put it on, but you guys was busy. You was busy and everything. Yeah. But so what should my manifold pressure be then on this to optimize? You know, right now, to give you an idea on my temperature, if I start pulling a hill and start lugging a little bit too much, I have no problem bringing it up 1100 degrees.
1100. Your thermocouple's in is your thermocouple in the exhaust pipe?
No, it's on the cold side.
On the cold side,
yeah,
in the exhaust pipe.
On the cold side.
Okay, so 1100. That means you're at 1400 degrees because you have to add 3. So yes, get back east. Try to give us some notice. Let's get you on the dyno. Ethan will tell you exactly where you're set, and let's get the turbo on there. And if the budget allows, let's do the manifold. And I congratulate you for doing the damper and the balancer, because that's the best thing you can do to the truck.
Yeah, I actually talked to you down in Dallas at the truck show, and that's the first time I've been able to get over there and get it. And I think, I'm not sure, but I don't know if this has ever been changed, and I got $2.1 million on it. So
boy.
I figured for a $550 part, I don't want to ruin a $30,000 engine. So,
and 30,000 is the magic number too, if you break a crankshaft or more.
Yeah. And more. Changing that dampener, what is there any hard parts about that? I mean, there's 8 bolts to take it off, put it on. There ain't really no challenge to that, is there?
No, it helps if you have somebody else to help you, because the damper with the balancer with the Caterpillar pulley is about 90 pounds. So if you're the one underneath taking the bolts out, make sure your friend has a good grip on it. Sometimes if you can have somebody stand over it and put some fan belts on it and hold the fan belts up while you're getting the bolts started.
Yeah. Okay. I got it.
Or if you have a spare bolt, cut the head off of it and put it on there so you can slide it on. But you're just dealing with the 90 pounds. Other than that, it's no problems. And you have a torque wrench. I think it's 195 foot-pounds.
195, okay.
That's what it is.
So what should the maximum manifold pressure be then? What should I never go over once I put one on and not do damage?
Well, if you're at 700 horsepower, you should be making close to 40 pounds of boost.
40, okay.
So, yeah, for every pound of boost, you don't have, you will gain 25 degrees. So if you think about it, you're running 400 degrees too hot.
Well, that's if I lug it. If I keep it wound up, you know, above 16, 17, it stays down about 9 to 1,000.
So you need to get another 8 pounds of boost anyway. 8 to 10 pounds
that's
of boost.
That's what I was curious about.
So. And do you have the Fleet air filters?
No, I was talking to your parts guy about that. You know, I got twin air filters on here, you know, one on each side, and I was talking to him. I said, do you have to replace both or just one? You know, most trucks only have one nowadays, but do you have to change both those, or what do you recommend on that?
Give you Fleet Air has a great discount if you buy the both, buy the pair. So get the pair and put in there, and you have straight stacks, or do you have our Quiet Performance mufflers on there?
No, I've got the stock one on, but when they put it on, they went in with an 1.5 drill bit and blew a bunch of holes in it. So it's the one that's down in the frame. 98.
Oh, it's 98. Okay, it's down in the frame.
Yeah.
What kind of truck is it?
It's a W900.
So it has the muffler that goes down, the exhaust goes in and turns around and comes right back out.
Yep. Yeah, they went in both sides and blew a bunch of big holes in it, they said. So.
How did they do that?
It's impossible
to get a drill in there.
I don't know, big long drill bit, he said. But.
And here's what I want you to think about. Exhaust is stupid. It needs direction. It's like a lot of people in our society today, right? They need direction. So the exhaust goes in. It hits that back wall, which is absolutely flat. Then it's dissipated. And then it has to go find that 5-inch pipe. So it's going in and it's going to the rear end. Now it has to turn around and come back towards the front of the engine and then out. And those two pipes in there are filled with 1/8-inch diameter holes. And unless they had a 90-degree angle drill and, say, a 1/2-inch bit, they could have opened up some holes. But they could only get in there about 8 inches with that drill, and that muffler's 3 feet long. I think it's a mistake running that muffler. I think you should get that off of there and put one of our W9 mufflers on there, and you'll see another 125 or so.
Is that the one that looks like a big U?
It's like a big U.
Yeah, okay, I've seen that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that pretty much answers my questions then. I'll have to save my pennies and come see you.
There we go. All right. Let's get to another call. Let's head off to Texas. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate everything y'all do. Today must be coolant day because I've got a coolant question also. I've got a 2012 Mac with an MP8 engine in it that I've owned since about last August. Very happy with the truck. When I first got the truck, I checked my truck out every day. Was it using any coolant? And now it's using some. I can't find anywhere it's leaking anywhere. But over the last month, to the first February to the end of February, I poured a total of a gallon in it over the course of the month. I keep it checked. If it's getting down to the minimum line, I pour some in it. And over the course of the month, I poured about a gallon in it, but I can't find anywhere where it's leaking. Got any suggestions?
So it's only used 1 gallon, correct?
Yeah, used 1 gallon over the course of the month. I'm on my second gallon now in March, poured a little bit in there. But it's not using it drastically, but it's going somewhere, I guess, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, does it go through the EGR cooler or anything like that? Could it be something like that?
Oh, yes.
Hold that thought. We'll get to a break and we'll come right back and we'll talk about that. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan with me, Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get back to the phones. We were talking to Daniel in Texas. All right, go ahead.
Daniel, that does go through the and do you have a good Mac shop near you?
Well, kinda. I'm all over the place right now. Y'all don't do any work on Macs, I take it?
We do not.
Really?
So
okay.
Yeah. The older Macs, yes, but not the newer Macs. What I would do is try to find out who is the best Mac shop that that you can find. Maybe somebody listening to the radio show could tell you of a great Mac shop. And get in there and just let them look at it and keep an eye on it. If you go through another gallon in another month, yeah, you definitely have a problem. And generally, it's the EGR cooler that you start with. How many miles are on the engine?
575,000.
Thanks. I use another thing that I always keep in mind is anytime these engines are over 500,000 miles, any engine, it can be a head gasket.
Oh, don't tell me that.
It's not that bad.
Daniel, have you done an oil sample?
I see it in the oil.
Yeah.
I haven't done an oil sample since the last
year. Yeah, I would do an oil sample because the first thing we want to know is the coolant getting into the crankcase? Because if it is, then we are going to look for things like EGR cooler or head gasket. If it's not getting into the oil, but you're losing it, then we look for a hot water leak. It's only going to leak under pressure going down the road, and that's why they're so hard to find. But you can get down there and look around and find some traces of the coolant. So the first step is just do an oil sample, and then we know whether it's getting into the crankcase or not. That helps us go find it.
Okay, well, I'm fixing to have the oil changed on it anyway, so where'd be the best place to send the oil sample?
If you want to use ours, you can just go to our website and order the sample, and it comes with the mailer and everything to send it back in. And then if you want, you can call during the show and we'll go over it with you.
Okay. One other quick question. Bruce said he didn't work on Macs, but do they have the oil filtration system for the MP8 Mac motor? Can you get it for
the OPS? Yeah, the OPS will work on that engine.
Oh, okay, because I'll see about maybe getting that too. Does Bruce install those on Mac motors? I'd have to get somebody else to do it.
No, we can install that for you.
Okay, all right.
That's
I'll
problem.
Get an oil sample when I get my oil changed, and we'll go from there.
There you go. Sounds like a plan. Let's head off to Kansas. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi guys, I've got a 99 N14 Select Plus, and last July we put in a Cummins remand in it, and in October we replaced injector number one, in December we replaced injector number three, and we have this slight miss that comes around every 45 seconds, and they've replaced the cam sensor, they re-ran the overhead, and it was right in the money. They checked all the grounds and cleaned all the battery posts, and no errors in the fuel, and we still have this little bit of a miss every 45 seconds or so. You guys ever run into anything like this?
Well, a lot of times we run into N14s with slight misses. I would beg you to use Lucas fuel conditioner in your fuel every time you fill up. And I'm going to let, if it's every 45 seconds, that could be an electrical issue. I'm going to turn this one over to Ethan.
In this case, I would even, have you tried a test ECM whatsoever there on it?
No, they haven't tried that. They were thinking about giving that a try. Cummins, they called Cummins, and they didn't have any idea what it would be outside of cleaning the battery post and the grounds and everything. But the thing runs just as smooth as silk when it's doesn't do this miss, but it's not a bad miss. It just kind of like two or three hits, and then it clears up. So,
hey, maybe you need to put the fast fuel separator on it and get the air out of the fuel, because that might be the air that's passing through the fuel filter.
They did do a air check on the fuel system to see. They put a clear line on it, and there was no air coming through the fuel system. Would the FAST be something other than that to help with that?
Well, Cummins says diesel fuel has about 3% air. Katz says it can be as high as 10%. So whether it's 3, 7, or 10, we're not going to argue that, but we know there's air in diesel fuel. And by putting a clear line on it and shining a flashlight and looking sideways through the light beam helps you to see it, but there's still air in fuel. And your fuel filter, you notice when you go to change your fuel filter, it's only half full of fuel. That's because the rest is air, and the air has to pass through the engine. So the first thing I would do is I'd call my shop and order the fast fuel system, and I'd put that on there.
Okay.
Before you spend a lot of other time, and this problem is going to drive you crazy because it's bothering your subconscious mind.
Do you think it's okay that it does this, I guess? Is it doing any harm to my engine? I want this thing to last a long time. And
It's not doing any harm. It's just irritating you, and the FAST system
sure
will help you.
Yeah, you spend all this money, and you want a nice running truck, so...
Everything I own to be absolutely smooth and run up to my expectations. And if it doesn't, it drives me crazy. And if you're anything like me, it'll do the same to you.
Well, it's definitely bothering me. So I guess we'll give that FAST system a try.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
All right. Welcome. Let's head off to Kentucky. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I got two quick questions. I have a 2007 International with an I6 Cummins, and every time I get the fuel filters changed on it, it is extremely hard to start. And when it finally does start, it'll white smoke a complete shop. And where do I start with that?
Bruce, why would
are you filling the?
I was just going to ask a question. The fuel filter, you know, if it's not starting, we're sucking air somewhere, they're not priming it right or whatever, but why white smoke? I mean, that doesn't seem to make sense.
No, yeah, I don't know. Every time they've been changed, I always fill up the filters before they screw them back on, and the only way that it's ever been able to start afterwards is to hook up a separate fuel system that gets the truck running until it builds up pressure, I guess.
Just a weird question, because
I would fix that one just like the other one. I'd put the fast fuel system on, and because that'll prime it.
Okay,
Adam,
maybe I just don't get enough pressure.
Just one quick question. Yep. When you say they're filling the filters before they put them on, do you know if they're filling them with fuel or some sort of additive? I've seen shops that put an additive or a fuel conditioner of some sort, and that might explain the white smoke if they're not using fuel.
No, it's they're filling it with fuel, and even when it does start, it'll idle very rough for the first minute and a half, and then it'll smooth out, and I have no more issues. It'll start up just fine every time after that.
Oh, that's because you're getting air in the fuel line. Every engine's going to have that for a minute or two. It takes as much as 6 miles going down a highway to get completely air out, but to get all the air completely out of the system. So
okay.
Yeah, if it's
okay,
only having
my.
If it's only happening the first time you started after you put the filters on, that's normal.
Okay, it's just extremely hard to start. Every truck I've ever had or drove, it was nowhere near that hard to start. I mean, it's extremely difficult.
I would put the FAST system on and turn the key on and let it prime it. That's all
okay.
I would fix that all problem.
Right. And my next question is a 2007 Freightliner Classic with a C15. Every time the fan kicks on, it'll have a steady drip out the overflow of coolant. And as soon as the fan kicks off, it'll stop dripping. Any ideas on that?
Where's that? Is it coming out of the overflow of the radiator?
Yes.
Only when the fan's on.
Only we're when the fan kicks on.
We're going to have to skip that one because I don't think we're going to have time to get through all of those issues because the music's playing. They tell me I've got to get out of here, so we'll see you back here next time. Thanks for joining us. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. This has been the Power Hour. Thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power for helping me out, and we'll do it again next week. All right, everybody, we're going to do a second hour of general questions. It looks like there's some room. So if you have a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all, go ahead and press one on your phone right now, and I will be able to get to you. So let's get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is call. I have a couple things, nothing major, and then we're going to get to your calls and questions. I've been watching more news this year than I have watched in probably 10 years. Everything going on with the election and, you know, with Trump's early days in office, it's certainly been interesting. But I'm also starting to notice this pattern. You know, we had the whole protest, a day without immigrants. We had a day. Now we're having a day without women. We have all of the Lives Matter groups, which just makes me crazy. Black Lives Matter, Gay Lives Matter, Truck. Now we have a group in the industry called Truckers Lives Matter. I feel like gagging when I hear this. I can't believe that somebody in the trucking industry really wants to identify with this kind of movement. The crazy thing is, I agree with what the group wants, what they're protesting right now. Right now, the group is talking about a national concealed carry law. I completely agree with that. I would love to see a national concealed carry law so that a driver could go through the steps, get qualified for concealed carry, and know that they are safe with that weapon everywhere in the country, whether it's Chicago or DC or whatever state. That needs to be done, and I'm all for that. But the idea of using this whole Lives Matter thing, there are a couple other problems I have with this group, by the way, too. The people running it, I've had some history with, and I'm less than impressed. So I'm torn. I do like what they're attempting to do, and now they're planning a convoy to D.C. Hopefully, if they're going to do that, they're more successful than every other convoy I've seen to D.C. because most of them have just been embarrassing. They make a big deal out of it. They get all over the news and then nobody shows up. So I'd hate to see that happen again. But this idea, whether it's our lives matter, whoever they happen to be talking about, the whole concept to me is just idiotic. All lives matter. Come on, really? Do you think there's anybody on the planet who is going to say, oh, don't worry about me, my life doesn't matter? So the whole point, I thought it was ignorant when we did Black Lives Matter and then Blue Lives Matter, and now truckers' lives matter, really? That kind of makes me crazy. And then the other thing, you know, a day without immigrants, a day without women, somebody in trucking, I know, is going to jump on this bandwagon and say, oh, let's do a day without truck drivers. We'll show them. Does anybody believe that you are going to gain support by not showing up and doing what you're supposed to do? If immigrants are so important to our economy, or if women are so important to our economy, or if truck drivers are so important to our economy, do you really think if you don't show up and do what you're supposed to do, that anybody's going to support you? Or are you just going to piss everybody off? The idea of drivers shutting down the economy, do they, first off, they'll never pull it off. It's been tried so many times. But if they did pull it off, don't you think you would just piss everybody off? What would be the point? I really don't get the point of these kind of demonstrations. I don't know. You tell me, because I think they're pretty ridiculous and they do more harm than good. What the hell ever happened to just show up and do your job? That's what you get paid for. Do you really think that you have to be appreciated to do your job? The appreciation is your pay. That's what you agreed to do. You agreed to do a job. Your employer agreed to pay you. Nowhere in any of these issues does it say that everybody has to appreciate you. And you know what? You can't demand appreciation. Just like you can't demand respect. You earn it. So I wish these groups would just knock it off and get back to doing what they do. Again, the idea of a national carry law for drivers, I completely support. It's unfortunate I just don't support the group that's pushing for it right now. With that said, I had a couple other things, but I think we'll just get to some phone calls and find out what it is you want to talk about. Let's head off to Washington. Daniel, welcome to the program.
And how do you do that, sir?
Good. What can I help you with?
Got a truck that I think you'll like for the most part. It's a 2017 Freightliner Cascadia glider. Detroit Series 60, 13 speed, and that's the most part. The part that you might not like are the gears, which are 342s, but it does have the good low rolling resistance Bridgestone rubber all the way around. Problem I'm having right now is an oil leak, and I'm wondering, from where I can see, it's almost as if it's leaking right where the timing case meets the block. How big of a job is that?
It's not horrible. This is one of the oil leaks that I would fix, and this one's fairly common. I think Pittsburgh Power even has a special fix for this one, if I remember right. There's one of the engines they had, and I think this was it. I'd have to check with them though. But this is one that it's not bad enough. The repair isn't that bad that I would skip it. Sometimes, you know, we look at some oil leaks and you're just going to spend hours and hours and hours getting to where the leak is, that sometimes I'll say you're better off just letting it go. This one I would get fixed.
Because as far as oil consumption goes, I've got about 9,400 miles on it. And with the oil leak, I'm still not through a gallon yet.
That's a good
sign.
So I'm
not to the L part yet.
Yeah, especially in the first 10,000 miles. Many times we see an engine go through a lot of oil in that first 10 or 15 or even 20,000 miles, and then it slows down. So yours is already very low oil consumption right from the beginning. That's a good sign.
Oh, that kind of makes me feel a little bit better. I've been kind of experimenting. I'm at 6.33 miles to the gallon average for all miles so far. And that leads me into my second question. When I fill the truck up, I get a certain price at the pump. On my settlement, when I entered in the profit gauges, because I did want to make sure that I can be the most successful as I can so I know all my numbers.
Good.
When they do the settlement, it's a different number. In general, just kind of an example, I paid $6.07 for fuel for 230 gallons in Ohio, and then it was $5.08.87 on my settlement.
How do I enter that? Yep, very, very common. So when we designed profit gauges and fuel gauges, we designed it with this in mind because, and again, this is why our software is so much easier than something like QuickBooks or even some of the trucking specific software products on the market didn't put anything in to account for this. And we did because we know this is really common. So we actually give you two options. One, if you're using fuel gauge and profit gauges together, you can enter, and this is the one I recommend. I recommend entering the fuel ticket as you're standing there putting the fuel in the truck. And we know that number is going to be wrong when you put the cost in, but your fuel mileage calculation is still correct. And that's why I want you to do it when you're standing right there, because that's when you're going to learn the most. When you're putting in fuel, that is the tank that you were just doing all your driving from. And when you see the fuel mileage number, it means more. The sooner you put it in, the better you're going to understand your own fuel economy. Then when the settlement comes, the edit feature in fuel gauges is drop dead simple. You can go back into that fuel ticket and change that price in 30 seconds or less. So that's what I recommend. Okay. Put in your fuel receipts as you get them. And then when the settlement comes, you can go back in and correct that cost. We do give you another option, and that is to separate the two programs and you don't have them talking to each other. So you're using fuel gauges just to track your fuel mileage, and we don't even care so much about the cost. Then you would be using profit gauges just to enter your settlements. And that way you don't even have to
question on that too.
Okay. Let me get to a break and I'll come back to that. But that's the way we give you two options. Either one of them are okay. I like the first one where we do have the two programs connected and you just go back in when you're doing your settlements and correct those entries. It doesn't take long at all. We'll come right back and get some more of your calls and questions right after this. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Daniel in Washington. Daniel, go ahead.
Okay. The other question with profit gauges that I had, when I get my settlements in, how exactly do I show, because I put in what I get net, but I'm trying to make the settlements accurate for my net. And I just kind of created this basically a deduction, and I named it something to the effect of, you know, it was basically just saying it was the difference between, it was that 86% of the difference is I forgot what I named it, but it's basically kind of a deduction. I just kind of did the math of what 86% of what that load paid was, and I just kind of deducted that to make the net after everything accurate. Is there a better way to do that, or
Yeah, I'm a little confused as to what you're doing, and rather than spend a lot of time trying to figure it out here, I think there is going to be a much better way than what you're doing based on what I'm hearing. But the best thing to do is call us or drop us an email to support@letstruck.com, and we'll get one of our trainers on the phone with you. And we can even go in and do a screen sharing with you. If you're at a computer, we'll do screen sharing and we can go right into your account, fix it. Because if we go in the account, then I can see exactly what you're talking about and fix it and then show you how to enter it from there. So that would be the best way. Just get with us and we'll get into the account and fix it for you and then show you how to do it.
Outstanding. Well, as far as the fuel gauges go, I have the app and I religiously enter in everything as I'm doing at the pump, just like you were saying before. I just don't have it synced to the profit gauges.
And that's, if you want to continue doing it that way without syncing it, that's the other option we give people. And that's fine. Either one of them works fine. So congratulations on staying on top of the numbers. I promise it's going to make a difference. Let's go to California. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Got a couple of questions. You talked about one in an earlier show about the you were talking about coolant. I've been having a lot of problems lately with a temperature gauge. Just it'll surge all the way up, check engine light, and a little red light comes on, and then it'll go back down, and it happens right before the or right as the fan is kicking in. You have any ideas on that?
That's bizarre. When you say the temperature surges, how much?
It goes all the way to like 225, and then those two lights come on, the check engine light and the little red light on the gauge itself, and then it'll drop back down to the normal range, 150 or so, 150, 200.
What year and what engine?
It's a Detroit 60 series, 2016.
Ooh, okay. I don't know a whole lot of. Yeah. I don't know. I've never heard that before.
Glider kit. Okay. So I just thought I'd ask you. That wasn't my main question anyway.
Okay. Yeah, that one. I've never. That would require some troubleshooting. That may even be electrical. I don't know. I can't think of a mechanical reason why that would happen.
Yeah, I was thinking electrical as well. I've got a question. I've talked to you a couple of times about an engine transmission that came out of a 99 Freightliner Century class that I'm having dropped into a 2002 Freightliner Century class. I didn't know that different transmissions existed. I thought all I've ever been in 12 years have been Eaton transmissions. And I found out recently that it was a 10-speed Meritor transmission that came with that motor. Recently found out I've got an opportunity that I could drop a 13-speed Eaton. And basically I'm wanting to know what the pros and cons of the Meritor versus the Eaton and if this would be a good move.
So this is a Meritor. It's not an auto shift, is it?
I don't think so. But I don't know for sure.
If it's a Meritor auto shift, I would stay away from it. And the reason I would stay away from it is they only sold the Meritor auto shift in this country for a couple years. And then there was a big lawsuit over whether or not Meritor stole their technology. And so they stopped selling that transmission. And when they stopped selling it, they stopped training anybody to service it. Now, a mechanical transmission doesn't bother me at all because any transmission shop can work on it. It's just gears and parts and it's mechanical. The problem is when the Meritor auto shifts start having electrical or software issues, there's nobody around that knows how to fix them. And I went through a nightmare. If I had to talk about my worst mechanical experience in all 30 years of owning trucks, it was the Meritor auto shift transmission. I spent $15,000 trying to troubleshoot one, and the dealer claims that they had another $15,000 worth of labor that I wouldn't pay because they just continued to charge me over and over and over and never got the problem solved. And there was nobody around that knew anything about that transmission. If it were a mechanical Meritor, I'd be okay with it. If it's an auto shift, I would absolutely get rid of it. There's just too much potential.
That may be the issue because what he did tell me was that they didn't make Meritors anymore and right. that the parts would be hard to get and more expensive to.
So then let's talk about the difference between the 10 and the 13. The 13 makes a truck more drivable. If we have the wrong gears, like say 336 or something like that, we can make up for that bad gearing with the 13 speed because we can run in 12th. With a 10 speed, you can't really run in 9th. That's not going to work. So there are times where I really prefer a 13 speed, but it comes down to cost. If I went out and I was able to buy a really good, inexpensive, older truck with a 10 speed, in some of these trucks, we were only spending $10,000 or $12,000 or $15,000 for the whole truck. If it has a 10 speed, I'm just going to live with it. And I'm okay with that because to change it to a 13 speed is probably going to cost us $7,000 or $8,000. Hell, that's half of what I paid for the whole truck. So it would come down to cost. You said you have the opportunity for a 13 speed. How much is it going to cost you to swap it out?
Well, actually, the guy that he's working a deal out with me, and by the time all said and done with all the work he's doing, I'm getting the truck for, I'll have it for under $15,000, and that's it, with the 13-speed transmission included.
Then I would take the 13-speed Eaton in a heartbeat.
Okay, now what about the gears? Is there certain gears? Because I still haven't been able to find out what gears are in it. Something about 336s.
We can work with almost any gear, especially in the beginning, because the difference between the worst gear they could put in it and the best gear I might spec is only a couple tenths of a mile per gallon anyway. So there are so many. So if somebody said, hey, I'm looking at this truck, I love everything, but it's got 308 gears, which would just be horrendous in most cases. I would say, so what? Buy it anyway. We can deal with that. There are lots of ways we can improve fuel economy. And someday, maybe we will change gears. $3,000 or $4,000 to change gears, not a big deal. So, for me, if I get the right body, an aerodynamic truck and the right engine, I'm pretty good with that. I can change everything else or live with everything else, and it's not that big of a deal. So whatever gears this truck has, that wouldn't be a big enough factor for me not to buy it. If you like the truck, price is right, and the value's there, I wouldn't worry about the gears.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to... Oh, you know what? I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us into a break. We're going to come back and get some more calls right after this. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. There's lots there. Don't be in a hurry when you get there. Click around on everything because we have our whole podcast network that is there. We have multiple shows. We have the Power Hour shows. We have the Rates and Lanes. We have Trucking with Authority. We have Destination Health. Those are all podcasts, and you can go back and listen to all the past episodes. You'll find that on the website. You'll find a lot of our blog posts. When I write about certain topics, there are plenty of those there. You'll find the store, and we are always adding great stuff to the store. We've added a lot of really good, healthy food options for people that are on either a keto or a paleo style diet. We've been adding lots of great food options. I am always scouring the market looking for the very best, and when we find it, we add it to the store. So there's stuff being added to the store every week. So go check it out at letstruck.com. We'll be right back. We'll get some more of your calls and questions right after this. Kevin Robinson. All right, real quick heads up here. We have two segments left to record, and it looks like I could probably squeeze in a couple more questions. So if you have a question, a comment, a topic, go ahead and press 1 on your phone right now, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get to you. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's head off to Florida this time. Scott, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm new with this whole owner-operator thing. I just bought a 2007 Peterbilt with the Cummins engine in it and could use some coaching on getting started. Another trucker buddy told me to dial into the radio program, and so just wanted to get some idea on how to get started here.
Got it. Okay, so
what you had to say.
Got it. All right, so just a forewarning here. I may beat up on you a little bit, but nothing major, maybe just to make a point or two. We'll see. I just like to give really good advice and not tell them what they want to hear. I would prefer to tell people what they need to hear. So you're new to the owner operator thing. How long have you been in the industry?
I started driving in 2014 on as a lease operator for Prime, and just felt like I was getting beat up there. And
good.
I could probably do better, or at least not do any worse on my own.
Yeah.
And got just enough money together to buy into this truck, so that's what I did.
I agree, you were getting beat up. I'd much rather see you in your own truck than in the lease purchase programs. They're awful. So what are your plans, if you have any? So you have a truck. What was the plan? What did you want to do with the truck?
Well, I'm really not sure. I was a flatbed driver, and the money just wasn't there to make it worth all the extra I was going through as a flatbed guy. I'm hauling reefer now for a small company out of California. And I'm doing much better, and I'm just trying to get educated. I'm not really sure where to go, so I'm not really sure what my options are.
Got it.
I hear you have a seminar in May. I was wanting to sign up for your seminar, but I don't know enough to even ask really intelligent questions here.
Perfect. And let me congratulate you on a lot of people, if they don't feel confident to even ask the right question, will just not say anything, and then things just get worse. So congratulations on just jumping in and saying, look, I don't even know what the hell I'm asking, but I need some guidance, because that's the way you're going to get. So we have what you're looking for, help in the business as an owner operator. That's the core of what our company does. It's the core of what I've been doing for 25 years. So we have lots of resources to help people be better at what they do as an owner operator. I have a book, a whole program. It's got audio. You can listen to it while you're driving. It's got video from seminars that I've done. It's got a worksheet, workbook. It would have been ideal before you bought the truck and leased onto this carrier, but there's still a lot you could learn from that program. Like I said, it would have given you even more if you would have done it before you did any of these steps, but you're still going to get a lot out of it. I wrote this program for exactly what you're going through. Somebody who is getting started as an owner operator and just needs help, just general help. I cover every topic you can think of in that program. You can find that, you can buy it in the store on our website. The seminar that you're talking about is our CMC, Certified Master Contractor. We've been doing that program for 11 years now. When I first started it, I used to get 10 or 15 people in a room for 2 days. Now, last year, we had 400 people in the room for 5 full days. And it is everything we can possibly cram into 5 days about being successful in trucking. Whether you're looking to buy your first truck, or we have fleets there that own 15, 20, 25 trucks, and they're looking to grow. And we cover every topic in between all week long. So we cover fuel mileage and maintenance and, you know, getting your own customers if you wanted to do that, getting your authority, accounting and taxes and fuel tax. And like I said, virtually every topic we can cram into that week, we do. There are a lot, I do a lot of the speaking there, but we have lots of other great speakers. We bring in some of the best authors on business. We bring in people that train on negotiations and sales and all kinds of stuff. We start at 8 o'clock in the morning sharp, you know, breakfast, and some of the breakout sessions actually start at 7. And most nights, 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening, we still have stuff going on. It's just a really busy week. There's no other event like it in trucking. Normally, we have been doing it in May. This year, we've moved it to September. So you have some more time to get ready for that and prepare for it. But you can sign up now. So it's going to be in Council Bluffs, Iowa, at the Mid-America Center, which is drop dead. It's right there off Interstate 80. We have lots of truck parking. You can bring truck, trailer, whatever you want. We even do. We have some programs. We have what we call a fuel mileage makeover program, where we, when your truck rolls in that week, we go over the whole truck. We do a full inspection. We pull oil samples. We put a team on it and say, okay, what can we do to this truck to improve the fuel economy? And we give you a long written report. Now, I will say on that program, you've got to get in early and get signed up for that program, because that program sells out every year. So if you're interested in that kind of a really intensive fuel mileage makeover for your truck, you got to get in on that one pretty quick. So that's the seminar, the CMC. It is in September this year, but you can sign up now. You can either go to the website and sign up, or you can always call us. We also have all of our shows, our podcasts, which you can find on our website. So in addition to the shows I do, like this one, we have other hosts that do other shows for us on our podcast networks. We have guys that talk about getting your own authority, operating and working with brokers, rates and lanes. We have a health show on Wednesdays. We cover all kinds of things. So if you're looking for help, you've come to the right place. We have all kinds of resources to help you. That's what we do.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate you're saying just go to the webpage and start there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, calling here was a great start. Keep listening to the show. But go to the website, because there's just all kinds of resources. And if you're looking around the website and you have a question about anything, we have an online chat. You can talk with our Tribe Care team right online, or you can always call us and we can help you with whatever you need.
All right. And as fate would have it, I'm getting pulled into a scale right now.
Got it. Okay. I'll let you go. And one other thing you really want to look hard at, our software for accounting. If you want to be successful, you absolutely need to be using our software. It's called Profit Gauges. You'll find it on the website, or you can call us. Let's go to Louisiana. Chris, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I have a 05 379P, C16 cat in it. I mean, a C15 cat, 075.
Okay.
And I started up in the morning time. I let the truck idle, warm up for about 30, 45 minutes. And it don't miss nothing when it's sitting idle and warming up. So when I take off for about the first 50 miles, it pours white smoke and misses like crazy every morning.
Okay. Two questions. One, have you done an oil sample recently?
No, I have.
I that's the first thing I would recommend. What we're concerned about when there's white smoke, there's a really good chance we're getting coolant into the combustion chamber. And the oil sample will tell us, because if you're getting coolant into the combustion chamber, we're going to see traces of that in the oil sample. And then that's going to give us an idea of where to look. Since this started, have you had to add any coolant?
No, the coolant stays cool.
Okay. The other possibility, what would happen if you didn't let it warm up for 30 minutes? Because that's excessive. We do not need to let a modern diesel engine warm up for that long, even on the coldest day. I mean, it's going to get up to temperature pretty quick. And as long as you, even if you were to jump in the seat, start it right up and go, as long as you're not, you know, grabbing gears and putting your foot to the floor coming out of the parking lot, which we shouldn't be doing anyway, you'll probably be fine. By the time we idle our way out of the parking lot, go through the gears nice and easy that first time, we're right up to operating temperature. So, and I'm going to come back to you right after the break, but that's what I would try, and I'll explain what I think might be happening when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the callers. I was talking with Chris in Louisiana. So two things, Chris. One, I would do an oil sample because that'll tell us if there is coolant getting into the oil. That engine is known for blowing head gaskets, and a head gasket could cause those. So that's why I'd like to get the sample done so we could tell. The other thing is I would try, don't let it warm up so much, or if you're going to let it warm up, bump it up to fast idle. If it's sitting there idling for 30 minutes at a cooler temperature, we may build up condensation, and that may be where the white smoke's coming from. So I would and keep an eye on the coolant. If it drops even a little bit, that's going to be an indication that it's coolant getting into the combustion chamber. You can go to our website, letstruck.com, and order the oil sample, and then you can call us here on the air, and we can go over it with you once that comes back. But that's where I would start, with the oil sample, and I would stop letting it sit there and idle for so long in the morning and see if that makes a difference. Let's go to Ohio. Lee, welcome to the program. Lee, are you with me? Sounds like somebody's there. Going once? All right. I guess not. Let's try Georgia. Jonathan, welcome to the program. It's your turn.
Hey, Kevin. Quick question. I've been eating this tuna fish. It's called Star Kits Select Yellowfin Marinated Tuna. It has omega-3 in it. And it has 250 megagrams of sodium. Is that, you know, something to worry about? Is that too much?
Not the sodium, and I'll come back and explain why I don't really worry too much about sodium in a second. There's a couple other things I probably worry about much more in this tuna than the sodium. Being that it's Starkist, the big national brands tend to use the worst quality. And the thing we have to be careful of with tuna is a big predator fish. And what happens is the fish that tuna eat, they also eat smaller fish. And the fish that they eat smaller fish. And the tuna is at the top of the food chain. And what happens is each fish up the line tends to build up mercury. And by the time you get to the big tuna that Starkist is harvesting, the mercury levels can be pretty high. And we want to try to avoid that. So there are some other really high quality brands on the market, Vital Choice, there's several that what they do is they harvest smaller tuna like skipjack and the smaller varieties that don't have the long lifespan to build up all that mercury. So I do love tuna. I eat a lot of tuna, but I buy the really high quality tuna, and I look specifically for the smaller species. The other thing I would be concerned about, when you say it's marinated, do you happen to have the can in front of you or the pouch, whatever it comes in?
No, I'm driving right now. I know it has extra olivar.
Yeah, here's the problem. Vinegar. I don't trust packaged brands and olive oil anymore, because even when you buy a bottle in the store that says extra virgin olive oil, there is a report out right now that has proven that 10 of the big selling brands of olive oil are not really olive oil. They're just lying. They're putting a different oil in that bottle. So when I see a food packaged with olive oil, then I really wonder, am I really getting olive oil? Probably not. And am I getting a good quality olive oil, or was it, you know, is it old? Is it rancid, which is very common? So my recommendation when it comes to tuna is, if you can't verify that you're really getting olive oil, then buy it packed in water. Or most of the brands I mentioned, the higher quality brands of tuna, don't pack in anything. No water, no oil, no nothing. It's just tuna. I like that. And then I add my own oil. So, for example, this is a great way to use one of the products we have in our store. We have really, really high quality oils that come in little single serve packets. And the beauty of that is we don't want oil that gets damaged. And oil gets damaged easily by light, by heat. So when the worst thing to do is to buy a giant bottle of oil. You don't want to be buying your oil at Costco or Sam's Club, because as soon as you open it, it starts to deteriorate. And if you have this giant bottle, by the time you get halfway through it, it's rancid and the fats are damaged. So that's why we contracted with this company to make these little packets. So they have macadamia nut oil. They have olive oil, and it really is olive oil. They have avocado oil. They have a blend of avocado, coconut, and I forget what the other one is in the blend. But these are awesome, because you would take one pack, open up your can of tuna that was packed in nothing, and pour in this oil, and you're getting the best quality fat you can get. You can also use them on salad bars, because when we go to the salad bar, I never trust the oil they have there. It's sitting out. It's rancid. I don't even know if it's really olive oil. Their vinegars are fine. I don't mind those. So I carry my own oil with me in these little packets. So when I go to a salad bar, I just empty a packet over my salad, add the vinegar, and I'm good. So I love that you're eating the tuna, and I would not worry about the sodium. The only thing I would say about sodium is make sure, if you're getting a lot of sodium, which is good for you, it's not a problem, you're getting a good balance of magnesium and potassium to go with it. As long as we have those three minerals in balance, we're not going to have a problem. When they've claimed for years that too much salt causes high blood pressure, that's wrong. It's not too much salt. It was the kind of salt, the cheap iodized salt, and it was the fact that we're eating a lot of sodium salt, but we weren't getting enough magnesium and potassium. So that's another reason why one of the supplements we carry in our store is called Light Balance. It's a liquid. You can put it in your bulletproof coffee. You can put it in water. You can put it in almost anything. And it just adds a little bit of salty taste. But it is a balance of sodium, magnesium, and potassium. And that will help you stay in balance. So keep doing the tuna fish, but I would skip the Starkist, and I would go get, you know, one of the Wild Planet is the other one I was trying to think of. So Wild Planet tuna. Yeah. You can find it in most grocery stores these days. If they have a gourmet or a health food section, you'll find it in there. I order mine on Thrive Market because it just prices. But that's awesome food to keep in the truck. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. It's shelf stable. It's got lots of omega-3s. So what you're doing is awesome. I would just up the quality.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I just have a quick question for you. I noticed pork skins. It says it has no carbohydrates and no sugar in it. Is that a good food to eat as a snack on a ketogenic diet?
It's an awesome snack, and it's what I have used to replace, like, tortilla chips, because I used to love chips and salsa or chips and guacamole. And both salsa and guacamole are awesome, especially if you're getting really good quality. But I didn't want the chips anymore. So pork rinds is what I have used. Again, I'm going to say the same thing I said about the tuna. If you're buying your pork rinds in the convenience store or the truck stop, you're just going to get really poor quality. And they're a good source of fat, but the poor quality brands, the fat's going to be rancid and damaged. So again, I love pork rinds, but I go that extra mile to get really good quality. So Epic makes really high quality pork rinds. If you go to Thrive Market, there are two or three different brands of really good quality pork rinds that you can buy. But that's another snack that I love to have around because it's easy, doesn't need refrigeration. It's virtually zero carb. And there are actually two products here you can get. You can get pork rinds. Let me make sure I get the names right, which is just the skin fried. And you can get Cracklins, which is the skin, and it had fat left on it when they fried it. I actually like those when I can find it because it's a higher fat content.
Okay. All right. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. There's the music. They're trying to tell me I've got to get out of here. We're all out of time. So we'll do it again. And thanks for joining me. See you next time. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy, always do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thanks, everyone. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.